जन्मानेकशतैः सदादरयुजा भक्त्या समाराधितो भक्तैर्वैदिकलक्षणेन विधिना सन्तुष्टैश स्वयम् श्रीगुरुरूपमेत्य कृपया दृग्गोचरसन् प्रभुः तत्त्वं साधु विबोध्य तारयति तान् संसारदुःखार्णवात् तत्त्वं साधु विबोध्य तारयति तान् संसारदुःखार्णवात् सर्वव्यापकमद्वितीयमजरं वेदान्तविज्ञापितं द्वन्द्वाभासविवर्जितं भवहरं शान्तिप्रदं देहिनां कर्माकर्मविकर्महीनममलं त्रैगुण्यविच्छेदकं ध्यायेत् ब्रह्म सदा प्रशान्तमनसा भक्त्या च सश्रद्धया ध्यायेत् ब्रह्म सदा प्रशान्तमनसा भक्त्या च सश्रद्धया
Actually, we have been thinking what is to be done at this time in this class. Hearing the questions in the morning, I felt that we will do a comprehensive sadhana. We are giving an English name. In Shastric way, it is called Sadhana Chatushtaya. Very common name, everybody knows also, but we thought we will repeat. We will discuss in detail what the sadhana is, especially those who are wisdom-oriented, those who are trying to know the truth. Actually, it is wrong to say those who are trying to know the truth. This sadhana chatushtaya is extremely important for the non-renunciates also. Even if we don't speak about the mumuksha, which is coming last in the four sadhanas here, just the Vivek and Vairagya, the first two, discussion on that and contemplation on that is extremely important for the non-renunciates also, because it gives a tremendous confidence. It takes away all our so-called depression and misery that we are suffering from. It takes away from us, from our mind, the agitation we suffer from. So, those who are in doing some work, it is extremely important to regularly contemplate on these so that their mind will remain untainted, unaffected by the world. Not only that, those who are given to upasana, they may say, no, we are not interested in wisdom, we are given to only puja, we will do only worship, we believe in God and we will do worship. For them also, their worship to become fruitful and the worship must take them ahead on their path. To do that, this discussion on Viveka and Vairagya and the contemplation on it is extremely important. We should always remember this, our spiritual sadhana is a vidya, which is a subjective vidya. Subjective means it has to it deals with our own personality and our own self. So here, just listening or reading and knowing from the book and from the listening is not, it serves no purpose at all. Unless it is reflected, whatever we have read is reflected in our mind, in our character, that we become, that common way it is expressed as, we have to become whatever we read or whatever we listen to. So that way, if we call nitya anitya vastu viveka se, just knowing it, what is nitya and what is anitya, it is not enough. It is not at all the purpose of our shastras. We have to always discriminate between what is permanent, nitya means permanent, and anitya means impermanent. I will come into a little more detail, I'm just saying as an introduction. We have to discriminate between the two and understand what do they mean, and finally we have to take to the permanent and discard the impermanent in our mind. Then only we will get the eternal abode. Otherwise, just knowing nitya, we are not going to get the eternal abode. Yoga Vasishtha says that if you have to know the taste of the guda, of jaggery, you have to eat jaggery. Otherwise, saying that jaggery is sweet will not mean anything. Similarly, here also, whatever is spoken of that the Atma is unaffected, taintless, it is all-pervading, universal, one, non-changing, all these qualities, they have to be tasted. They are not just to know that yes, Atma is all-pervading. No. We have to have the universality in us, we have to taste it. Then only we will get the benefit of it. In the Vedas, after the Karmakanda, I don't know what Swamiji has said in the morning first, but I was not there. That after the Karmakanda, when they start the Jnanakanda, that is the Upanishads, they start. In the Brahma Sutra, it is called Athato Brahma Jijnyasa. This is the first sutra of Brahma Sutras. Before that, it is Dharma Jijnyasa. What is Dharma Jijnyasa? It is knowing what is right and what is wrong, how to lead your life, to become selfless, to do everything with Shraddha, to do whatever you do with enough of attention, enough of regard. If you give some gift, something, it has to be done with a certain mindset. That is very important. Otherwise, the benefit of dana will not be there. Like it is in our shastras, it is said like Hriyadeyam, Shriyadeyam, Shraddhayadeyam, Ashraddhaya Adeyam, like that. That whenever you are giving, you give with Shraddha. Don't belittle the person to whom you are offering the gift. You have enough respect for him and he is giving you the opportunity to gift him something. Have that humility and give. When you are giving Shriyadeyam, if you have enough, give accordingly, you give in proportion to what you have. Otherwise, it will be karpanya, your mind will remain constricted. By giving, you should not think that I have become a great person and he is helped by me. No. You have your giving, and because he is, the other person is available, he is giving you the opportunity to give. Like that, our dharma jijnyasa is not simple. We should not try to belittle it. Until the dharma jijnyasa, that everything is known in that righteousness, the righteous way of living, actually our life will not be proper. Even if you take to the wisdom path, it does not fructify. Generally we find that however much we may explain the truth, people are not able to grow. Where lies the lack? Lack lies in our life, the way we have led the life. That is why in our country this Varnashrama was there. That you start with the Brahmacharya and there we learn everything about righteousness, about Dharma and all. Also we are given some idea about the truth there. Upanishadic knowledge is also given. They may not fully practice it, but they will have the gist of it. Without that, nothing will be properly understood. But how a person should live his family life, household life, and later on the renunciate life, those qualities are imbued right in the beginning from the year of 6 to 18 during the Brahmacharya period. That is why they had instituted this Gurukula system. Because if you remain at home with your father and mother, if the parents have the knowledge and the sadhana chatushta, it is enough. But generally they will not have. So they used to send their children to a Gurukula, to a learned man who has all the qualities. In our country, anybody only a bookish learning was never regarded as a learned person. He will have to have the qualities mentioned in the Vedas. So, in a Gurukula, even the king's son and a poor Brahmin's son used to learn together. They were treated equally. The teacher will not give any particular preference to the king's son, because if I look after the king's son well, then the king will give me lot of money. The teacher may think that he is king's son, so if I scold him, the king will not give me money. And I will not get any money from the brahmana's son, so I will not care much for him. These things were not there in the teacher. How could it not be that? Because the teacher also had undergone a similar practice, similar tuition, similar tutelage under a proper teacher. That is how that brahmana teacher or the teacher, the guru, he grew those qualities which will make him impeccable. And he will not bother about whether it is, he will never look into the money aspect of it or any prapti, any gain. His mind will never moved by that. At the same time, he will know that it is king's son and he has to play the role of a king later on. So the way he will bring up the king's son and the way he will bring up the brahmana's son will be different. That he will take care of, and that he can take care of when his mind is free of all the objective gains or worldly gains. Only then he will be able to give them the proper treatment. So our country, it was discovered that these qualities can be best absorbed in the association of a guru who embodies the qualities. That is why the Gurukula system of education was given very great importance, that these qualities will be automatically imbibed if we stay with a person who embodies those qualities through behavior, through interactions, through everything. He will not know also. It is like osmosis, almost we say. That osmosis is, we have two liquids and in a semi-perforate, semi-permeable, separated by a semi-permeable wall. One has some salt dissolved, another is pure water. After some time we will find that the pure water also has got some dissolved salt in it. That is, by the natural process of liquid pressure, the salt will permeate into the inner liquid also. This is called osmosis. There is no force involved, external pressure, stirring, nothing is involved. Automatically the salt permeates into the inner liquid. It is just like that when we stay with a person, with the guru who embodies the qualities automatically they permeate and they fill in the disciples being also. So that is why this Gurukula system was given great importance, that real learning has to take place in the association of a guru who is an embodiment of the qualities. I don't know when the world is going to recognize it fully. Maybe in another 200-300 years, if I am optimistic, otherwise it might be 1,000 years. But they will try to get back to this system again, because it is a final system. There is no other way. However much management course we may go for, when you come to your managing your company, you will find that you will fail. Because the qualities cannot be had from the management courses unless they are imbibed from somebody who embodies those qualities. It has to be like that. And that is the easiest process also. Not that it cannot be had. It can be had with a in a certain measure, but the easiest process is to stay with a person who, in the association of a person who embodies those qualities. Now, in the Brahma Sutra, Athato Brahma Jijnasa, there has been a lot of discussion about this Atha, Atha, now therefore. What is this now therefore? If somebody says that, well, he has in the Karmakanda they have prescribed so many rituals, yaga, yajna and all, upasana, everything is there. One has performed all these things, therefore he can now go over to the wisdom. That is, he can be taught the Upanishads, he can practice the Upanishadic knowledge. Shankaracharya says, no. Even if a person has practiced the rituals, he may not have the qualities. Maybe in practicing the rituals, whatever prescriptions are given, he might not have followed. Those who have studied the Kathopanishad, they know very well that Nachiketa's father was doing some of the greatest of the yajñas, but he did not have the qualities. He was not following the prescribed method of doing the yajna. So he did not have the proper qualities. So he did not have the benefit of the yajna also. Now, because this, what does it mean? The absorption or the grasping of the knowledge will depend on what condition our mind is, our intelligence is. That will determine whether we will be able to practice knowledge or grasp knowledge. So it is not the past that one had read all the Vedas or had done all the rituals or some of the great rituals. Not at all. Those are not to be regarded. It will depend on his present condition, whether his mind, intelligence, body, emotion, the personality is ready to take to the knowledge path. There, Shankaracharya says, it is only referring to sadhana chatushtaya, that if the practitioner has enough of the sadhana chatushtaya, then he is free, he is the fit person to take up the knowledge pursuit. That is, sadhana chatushtaya is not just some sadhana to be known from the book. This is my point here. I discussed so much to emphasize that sadhana chatushtaya will set our, it is to prepare our mind, our being, our personality, so that the personality becomes fit to walk on the path of wisdom, fit to take up the knowledge pursuit. Only then the knowledge will be properly grasped. Now suppose we are so much after self-knowledge, because self-knowledge has been aggrandized so much that everybody runs after self-knowledge, and mostly we fail. But actually we need not run after self-knowledge at all. It is enough if we practice the sadhana chatushtaya. Because even if we don't have self-knowledge, it hardly matters. If we have enough of sadhana chatushtaya, we will be fulfilled in life to a large extent, and we will not have many of the constrictions and the troubles and the miseries in life. That is why Shankaracharya says that even for the grihasthas and others also who are not prepared for knowledge, for them also sadhana chatushtaya is the most important, extremely important practice. And if sadhana chatushtaya is practiced properly, then automatically it will lead to self-knowledge. In Kathopanishad we dealt with it quite elaborately, that the first few chapters were only to show the importance of sadhana chatushtaya. They have picked up a background where Nachiketa, a 7-year-old boy, is there. He had not practiced any rituals. He had not completed his brahmacharya also. How such a person is selected by the Yamaraja as the fittest disciple? Not only fittest, he said that just before starting the Brahmavidya, Yamaraja made the remark that, O Nachiketa, the Brahma Sadhana is wide open before you, and let more and more disciples like you come to us. That is the shloka there. That is, after it was shown that Nachiketa had enough of this sadhana chatushtaya, these qualities they are referring to, which are essential for a seeker, entering the wisdom of Brahman or the self-knowledge is nothing. It needs only the teacher has to tell you and you have to observe. That's all. The ground is ready for that. That is why he said the Brahma Sadhana, as if the Brahma Sadhana is wide open before you. Simply walk in. Not only that, let more and more sadhaks like you come to us. That means, what does it mean when the Upanishad says like that? That means all sadhaks should be like Nachiketa. These stories have no other meaning. They are fictitious stories created to hint, to give us the hint of what is really wanted of us. That means we also have to become like Nachiketa. We have to have this sadhana chatushtaya in ample measure so that we become fit for self-knowledge. Then we don't have to desire for self-knowledge at all. Self-knowledge will be easily available to us. So much is the importance of the sadhana chatushtaya. In this sadhana chatushtaya, the specific way it is expressed, it is not just four separated qualities they are referring to. It's an integrated whole. That is why generally in such cases they use the word chatushtaya. They are fourfold qualities. That is, you cannot say that I will have viveka but I will not have vairagya. Or I will have viveka and vairagya but I will not have shamadamadi, shatka sampatti and moksha. The four sadhana chatushtayas are the four sadhana chatushtayas, the fourfold sadhanas, they are called viveka, vairagya, then shamadamadi shatka sampatti. That means six virtues starting with shama. They are shama, dama, titiksha, uparati, shraddha, samadhana. They have integrated all the virtues together. That these six virtues one will have to have. And then last is the mumuksha. Mumuksha also, it is the desire for moksha or the aspiration for moksha. But moksha we have to understand very well before coming to any conclusion. It is not that I will not get born again. Vedanta does not say that I will not born again is the mumuksha. Vedanta says that I was never born, I will never die. So where is the question, I will born again? Rebirth is not in Vedanta. So we have to reform our ideas as we go forward. Here what I wanted to say is that all these four are integrated. You cannot say I want moksha, so I have mumuksha, but I don't want, I am not interested in viveka vairagya. A worshipper may say that I am worshipping Kali and I will have moksha. I want, oh Ma, give me moksha, he may say. But I don't want viveka vairagya. No, you cannot. Your mother Kali will give you viveka and vairagya, then only you will be taken to moksha. Not only that, in its ultimate level, all these qualities take us to the same point, that is the truth. When one becomes the self-realized, the realization is a conglomeration of all these qualities and the height of all these qualities, peak of all these qualities. The peak of viveka, peak of vairagya, peak of the sixfold virtues, the peak of mumuksha, everything is, it is all coming down from the same truth. They are all integrated. This we will discuss mainly viveka and vairagya, because the other two, as I said, even if they are not followed, if we follow viveka and vairagya, the others will automatically come. We cannot deny their arrival. And this practice of viveka vairagya themselves will give us so much of confidence, independence, what shall I say, freedom, that we even cannot imagine. It will fulfill us in a way. This viveka is defined in the Viveka Chudamani as nitya nitya vastu viveka. This vastu, generally we refer to as object, but in Vedanta, this vastu means the truth. It is referring to the truth in that. So it does not mean the object generally. Nitya nitya vastu viveka. As Swamiji was saying in the morning, the substance, there is no other word than substance. It is like that. The vastu also, although it means substance, it is not the substance alone. It means the truth in it. The tattva also is like that, whatever is the truth in it. So nitya and anitya. Whatever is nitya means permanent, which does not change at all. And anitya means changeful, which is always changing. The viveka means discrimination. So Vedanta tells us that we should always discriminate between what is permanent and what is transitory. Why? Because the very reason of our ignorance and misery in life is we run after the impermanence, run after the futile things, and we always crave for a permanent abode, eternity. Whenever we say that you will become immortal, we are eagerly running after that immortality. Even people run after immortality thinking that the body will ever remain, the body will not die. That delusion also is there. The fact remains that we run after immortality. Immortality means what? Permanence. So there is an innate tendency in us to run after, to want whatever is permanent. Now if we want to become permanent, then don't we have to know that what is permanent and what is impermanent and then look for the permanent? Suppose we hold on to money and something happens, either in the form of mistake or calamity or something, and we lose money. Naturally it is I am holding on to something impermanent. So when I am having money, I am happy. When I am not having money, I will become unhappy. So the mind will oscillate between happiness and unhappiness depending on the money. So mind becomes slave to money. Similarly, all other things, property, any other property or a person. Suppose I always depend on my husband. Now either I will die or the husband will die, or the husband may forget me and go away somewhere also, or leave me and go away also. So can we consider the husband or the wife as the permanent? If you hold on to some person as permanent, then again we will do the mistake of holding on to something impermanent, transitory. Even the guru, we were discussing last night I think, or this morning, that always wanting the presence of the guru, physical presence of the guru, and not finding it, we are becoming unhappy. But the physical presence of the guru is not permanent. We have to know what exactly guru represents. The truth that is represented by the guru. And when we hold on to that, we will be serving our guru best. At the same time, we will not miss the physical presence of the guru. So everywhere, even it is very simple. When we are, suppose there is wind and there is a huge tree, to save you from the storm, will you hold on to the small twigs or you will hold on to the trunk? Why are you holding on to the trunk? Because the twigs will vibrate and oscillate in wind, and it may fall also, it may break also. If you hold on to the trunk, then even if there is wind, it will not oscillate, it will not vibrate. So holding on to something permanent will make you permanent, will make you stable. Holding on to something stable will always make us stable. This is important from a child of 6-year-old child to a 100-year-old man. Why? Because if you, in your life, if you hold on to something which is always changing, always changeful, which is transient, then naturally in the life we will be always getting agitated, sometimes elated, sometimes depressed, sometimes running after things. You will never find peace or confidence in life. And you will behave also, that servility will be there. Servility will be there. We will behave like a slave. Suppose in the office we are interested in some position. Position is definitely not permanent. And for that we are trying to please our boss impertinently or doing something wrong, something which is not fully honest. Then you may get the position, but at the same time you don't know what is going to happen. Because your hold is on the position, and if you get the position you will be happy, if you don't get the position you will become depressed. And suppose by the time you get the position your boss changes and the next boss pulls you down or does something, transfers you, then again you will become unhappy. Rather than that, if we stick to our sincerity, our dedication, and do whatever we are doing to the best of our effort, then the promotion, when they are really deserved, not normally it will come. In exceptional cases it may not come, there also we can find out what is the reason and what we can do about it. So, holding on to the permanent things is extremely important, because that will give us the permanence. Even in our mind also, whatever we are holding on to, if we are always, the mind is thinking about transient objects, the mind will become always agitated and it will go on moving, it will go on, it will never find its stable pedestal. Now, in going into the Nitya Nitya Vastu Viveka, this can be thought of and expressed also in various ways. One is the permanent and impermanent. The same thing is also called Chit Jada Viveka. Chit means consciousness and Jada means object or inert. Jada means which is non-moving, inert. Chit Jada Viveka, it is the same thing. Then it is also called Atmanatma Viveka, that is Atma Vastu, Anatma Vastu Viveka. That is, what is the self and what is the non-self. I will explain that all these terminologies, they take us to the same point, only the analysis is based, it approach is different, that's all. But all the approaches are necessary to have a comprehensive idea about it. First of all, about consciousness, we have, the ideas have to be reformed. In Vedanta, generally in science or in our worldly life, conscious we refer to which can move by itself, and inert we refer to which cannot move by itself. Like the book, it cannot move. We call it inert. I can move, so I am called conscious. It is not at all like that. In Vedanta, the chit, the consciousness, if you think, you will find that consciousness, we are saying, it is all pervading. Any all pervading thing, can it ever move? Where will it move? It is already pervading everything. If at all there is all, it is pervading, it is everywhere. So where will it move? It cannot move at all. Whereas anything that is visible will be able to move, it will change, it will get born, it will die, that will be the Jada. Not only that, this Chit is defined as whatever reveals everything and reveals itself also, that is called the chit. The consciousness in Vedanta is defined as that which reveals everything and reveals itself also. The same definition is given to Atma also, to the self. Aham pratyaya gocharaha. That which is coming from the conviction of I am, or am, from that conviction, that is called the Atma. In fact, this Atma is the revelator of everything and revelator of itself also. It reveals the whole world, it reveals itself also. How? Because suppose it is not like the sun and moon with their light revealing the objects. Suppose even when we are seeing the book is not revealed by the eyes, It is revealed by the light primarily, but suppose we keep our eyes closed, then the book will not be seen. So it is dependent on our vision. If the eye is bad, if I am blind, then I will not be able to see. Even if the eyes are able to see, the final knowledge of the book, where does it take place? Is it not in our consciousness? So although apparently the book is revealed by light, but that is only an objective revelation, it is not the final revelation. The revelation takes place in our consciousness. And if the consciousness is not there, the revelation does not take place. So actually the final revelator is the consciousness. It reveals everything, and when nothing is there, it reveals itself also. It is independent in its revelation. Suppose, why are we calling it independent? Because all other revelation will depend on something. Suppose the sun also. Only when sun is revealed to me, my consciousness is there, sun will be known by me. It depends on the revelation, revelatory consciousness within me. The book, the revelation of the book, the existence of the book has to be revealed in our consciousness. It depends on our consciousness. But the consciousness itself does not depend on anything else to reveal. Suppose when we go to sleep, we don't find the deep sleep, we don't have any dream, we don't have any objective. See, even our mind, our body, what is revealing our mind and body? That we have a mind, that we have an intelligence. It is revealed within us by our intelligence. So the ultimate revelator is the intelligence. I think it is becoming a little dull and non-interesting. No? Huh? Why are we discussing this? Because the Shastras say that by knowing this, the permanent and the impermanent, no purpose will be served unless our mind always looks for the permanent, always aspires for the permanent. And when it aspires for the permanent, it gives rise to Vairagya. That is the second quality we are talking about. Vairagya also, we have to set right our misconceptions about it. Vairagya, always we think that we will go to the forest and sit alone there, we will not do anything. It is not the Vairagya. The real Vairagya is impersonality, which all of us would look for. This impersonality deludes us. We are not able to become impersonal because of lack of Vairagya. Now if, suppose what is happening generally, that we always have, in case of a book, if it is torn, we don't have any problem in saying that it is torn. If the book is new, we all know that book is new and we say it is new. When the book is red, we call it red. When it is black, we call it black. But when it is about ourselves or our family or our children, we are not able to have this impersonal attitude. Suppose the child has done something wrong. In that case, if it is my child, there is a tendency to defend. Even if we accept that the child has done something wrong, we try to defend by saying, because of the association of the neighbor's son, he has done this mischief. So that the blame goes to the neighbor's son, not to me. Maybe it is the other ways. The the neighbor's son is getting spoiled in the association of my son. But I would like to see it, to it that as if the neighbor's son has spoiled my son. Now, why are we not able to see in an impersonal way? Because it is my child and another is other's child. If my son stands first, then I am very happy. Maybe the neighbor's son also is equally good, but he could not get any rank. I don't bother much. Maybe a better son standing, getting the rank 6th, and my son not being so good also getting a first rank, I will be happy. Even if it is by mistake, I will be happy. Because we have a particular association of our own ego with that. We get attached to our own things. We are not able to have an impersonal vision about the world. That is the basic trouble of everything in our life, that we attach a particular ownership, whatever is linked with us. If it is my promotion, I am happy. If it is others, we are not happy. Now, this impersonality we are not able to have regarding our things, but ordinary objective things, we don't have that problem. Because this is dealing, the subject is dealing with our own personality. To grow impersonality and that objectivity, we must cultivate vairagya. And this vairagya comes out of the sense of discrimination. How? I will say. We are often given a practice of watching our mind, that take that observer's role, the witness bhumi. Sit and observe our mind. The thoughts are coming, thoughts are going. Generally we get involved with the thought. Whatever thought is coming, suppose it is a happy thought, we immediately become happy. If it is about our son or so, we immediately move with the thought and think about the son or think about the company. Like that we move. If it is depressing, we become sorrowful, we become sorry along with the thought. But suppose we can take a position where whatever thoughts are coming, we are observing but not getting involved with it. The thought will come, the thought will go, we will observe. If it is a happy thought, we will see that it is a happy thought, it is going. If it is a depressing thought, it has come, it has gone. We can look at it from there, that we can understand, then we can understand that they are only like some waves coming in the mind, that it's a formation in the consciousness. Some formations are happy formations, some formations are unhappy formations. They are coming and going like that. If we can take this observer's role by watching our mind, then what will happen? We will remain untainted by whatever is taking place in our mind. The sukha, dukkha, the elation, depression, whatever it is, they will come and go, but they will not affect us. If we can identify this role in this kind of a practice, in the actual field also when we are working, we will find that we will be able to invite this detached orientation, that whenever in field also we are about to get affected, we can observe the effect on the mind, how the mind is changing, how the mind is responding, but not get affected or tainted by it. Now that is exactly what the self is. The self is always called, it is never getting affected by anything. So, by practicing this, even without knowing the self also, we are coming closer to the self. How? By not getting modified with the thoughts. Whatever thoughts are coming, not getting attached to that, not getting modified by the thoughts, remaining untainted by that, actually we are coming closer to the self. So, we will become more and more composed like the self. we will get all the qualities whichever is described in the for the self. We will imbibe slowly all those qualities. The vairagya in the shastras is defined as ihamutra phala bhoga viraga. That is, iha means in this world, and amutra means if there are other worlds, people, those who are given to rituals, etc., they will think of the heavens and all, the afterlife and all. So generally, or in any other world, that all kinds of phala bhoga, bhoga, that is the main point here, the enjoyment. We always look for enjoyment, enjoying small, small things. That is our always tendency, to enjoy things. So only when, what the vairagya definition is saying, that only when our mind is not after enjoyment, we will be able to achieve the impersonality. Because we are always after small, small enjoyments, always the mind is looking for enjoyments, we are not able to have a true vision of the world, a true vision of ourselves also. We are getting tainted by our desires for enjoyment. That is why this conception about vairagya has come, that vairagya means not to enjoy the world, leaving the world, going away and remaining in the forest. Actually, it is not so. The real enjoyment comes when we do not become small. We do not become attached to small things. Suppose even what happens is that when we see a beautiful scenery, suppose we have gone to a sea beach and we see the sea wide expanse, we get so ecstatic about it, we get so much of joy seeing the sea. But next moment if we hear something has happened to the family, something has happened to the son or the father, we look at the same sea but we don't get the joy anymore. Now we have to analyze the situation. What is happening? The sea, if the sea had given me the joy, then when the bad news came, why the sea is not given us the joy anymore? That means the joy does not lie in the sea. Seeing the sea, the mind expanded and the mind became touching the horizon. We can even say the mind became universal, it expanded. The joy had come from the expansion, and the joy is marred by the some bad news about some, only maybe my son or my father or my friend. Such a small incident where one person who is related to me is involved, immediately it mars the whole joy. So the real joy does not lie when we get in the enjoyments we get by attaching through small, small things. The real joy lies in becoming impersonal. Vairagya is the real joy. Now, our shastras, they will not accept the viveka unless it produces vairagya. That is, if we are looking for the permanent, then we cannot run after the small, small, impermanent, transient things. Viveka means the distinction between the permanent and the transient things, permanent and the impermanent. So, if we have found that this is permanent and this is impermanent, and again then still run after the impermanent things, then our shastras will call that viveka is not a viveka. That is only bookish viveka. Viveka must give rise to vairagya, then only they will accept it as viveka. That means viveka must give rise to impersonality and your always fixing, our fixing to the permanent, then only it will be called viveka, and such a viveka will automatically give rise to the vairagya. And viveka vairagya together will give rise to the other qualities, like the third quality is coming, shama damadi shatka sampatti. Shama means the stable, peaceful state of the mind. Dhamma means a discipline of the sense organs, the sense enjoyments. they call it control. We would like to avoid the word control. It is a disciplined state of physical existence. That is, all the sense organs are under our control. Titiksha. Titiksha means sahanam sarva dukkhanam.
Apratikarapurvakam.
That is, you don't get affected by the situations around. Normally, we are slave to the surrounding situations. We are always becoming slave to the surrounding situation. Everything is all right. A little something has gone wrong in the physical setup or in the mental setup. Immediately we get affected. Something according to our wish we have not got, or maybe I am suffering a little hunger. Immediately we get agitated about it. Maybe we did not have proper sleep. Then also we get agitated about it. If we did not have a proper food, we get agitated about it. So titiksha is withstanding everything without getting affected. So naturally it gives us a great independent position, that we will not be controlled by the world, but we will be the controller of the world. The entire sadhana is to give us that freedom, that we will not be slave to the world. We will be controller of our own mind. We will be able to control ourselves, our mind, our intelligence. They will be under our control. So titiksha actually will build up that control, because we will become independent of the surroundings. We always say a seeker can judge his progress in sadhana by checking whether he has become independent of the surroundings or not. How much one has become independent of the situations, the external, internal, everything. External situation means professional situation, family situation, physical situation, whatever is happening around. If somebody abuses, then also he will not get affected. We often discuss about Bhartrihari's shloka, which is actually associated with Buddha also, that Buddha became very famous and somebody came and started abusing him right and left, a tantrika. Then after half an hour of abuse, he says that he finds that Buddha is not at all affected by it. He tells him that what is this that you are not responding to it at all? Because when somebody is scolding, if the response is not there, he will get all the more agitated. I think the family people will know it better, because the husband-wife relationship, it often happens that if the husband does not respond at all by the complaints of the wife gets all the more agitated. So we should immediately respond to that, so that the other person gets consoled about it. So Buddha responded at that time saying that dadatu dadatu gali gali mantah bhavantah, that in this world one can give whatever he has. I can give whatever I have. If I have money, I can give you. If I have peace, I can give you peace. If I have knowledge, I can give you knowledge. Now, you have enough of gali in your store, abuses in your store, so you can give me abuse. But I don't have any abuse in my store. How can I give you abuses? So this is the impeccable, that position one gets out of it. That titiksha is not a simple thing. It takes us to the self-knowledge there also. Unaffected by anything happening in the world, he remains with Himalayan confidence, remains stable. He doesn't get agitated by that. Shama dama titiksha uparati. This titiksha automatically gives rise to uparati. Uparati means withdrawal. A sense of withdrawal will be there. It does not mean that he will not be active. Whenever there is something to be done, he will do it. But other times he will not unnecessarily, his mind will not run after things, that many things, I have to get this, I have to gain this, I have to gain that, this money is not enough, how shall I divide the money among the sons, I will not give him, I will deprive my brother's sons completely, the whole money should go to my son. 10 buildings I have, how can I divide it? Let 9 be sold. All these things, the mind generally remains occupied with all unnecessary things. Whatever to be done, we can think and do. But after doing that also, our mind always goes on, because it relishes that clinging to the objective gain. When we are thinking of our property, our prestige, our position, or our preferences, we like to think in that manner. That is the clinging we have. We like to cling to that and relish it. Although it is painful, we cling it. The example given in the Shastras as well as Ramakrishna Dev used to say that the dog is biting a dry bone. It is biting a dry bone and relishing it. How? Because the bone is pricking into the gum and the blood is coming, oozing out of his own gum. But he is thinking it is from the bone he is getting the blood, and he is biting in more and more. Have you heard about this? It's a very common example given. So although it is, we may say it is very painful, but we like to have that pain is the problem. That is why Swamiji is having so much of difficulty to improve the disciples. Because the disciples, they like to stick to that constriction of वो हमको ये नहीं दिया, वो हमको ये नहीं बताया, उनको माँ ज़्यादा पसंद करते हैं, हमको नहीं करती हैं, बेकार हमें वो कुछ, उन्होंने कुछ बता दिया और माँ सोचती कि हमने बोला है. All these thoughts are unnecessary. If I have to do something, I can do. If I don't have to do, I don't do. So our mind, actually we relish thinking about painful things, hurting things. This relish is there in the mind. If it is not there, when we are not after these enjoyments, when that titiksha is there, automatically the withdrawal, the uparati will come. Our mind will become indrawn. When there is work, they will do, and that will they will do with full attention. And when there is no work, their mind will automatically come back to the self. It will rest completely, restfully. It will remain within itself. That is meant by uparati. So parakashtha, or the ultimate of uparati, is samadhi, that his mind doesn't move at all. That is shama, dama, titiksha, uparati, shraddha, samadhana. Between uparati and samadhana, they have put shraddha. Shraddha means what place the valuation of a certain things. That which we are giving the value. Suppose we are calling God the Supreme. Now, are we giving God the Supreme position? We are not generally. If we are giving God the Supreme position, then when a calamity has come, why are we so much complainful about it? We start shouting, howling, etc. God has given me this. We should accept it as His grace, whatever happens. And why do we forget God when we are too elated? The whole mind is taken away by something else. So we are not giving God the Supreme position. That means although we call God or the Truth or the Self the Supreme Reality or the Supreme, we are not giving Him the Supreme position. That is called lack of Shraddha. So Shraddha means to which we are giving the maximum value. That value attached to that. This value will be followed by attention also. If I am after money, our attention will be on money. If I am after the virtues, then our attention will be always focused on virtues. If I am after peace, if I am valuing peace, then our attention will be on peace, how to generate peace. If I give the maximum value to wisdom, then always my attention will be on wisdom. So this Shraddha is the most important factor here, because it determines what we are going to become. That is why Bhagavad Gita says that Shraddha Mayoyam Purushaha. Shraddha Mayaha Ayam Purushaha Yo Yat Shraddhaha Sayevasaha. Shraddha Mayoyam Purushaha Yo Yat Shraddhaha Sayevasaha. We are actually a bundle of Shraddha. Shraddha Maya, we are made of our Shraddha. Yo Yat Shraddha Sa Eva Saha. Whatever Shraddha we have to whatever, we become that. It is exactly so. We become what we want, what we value the most. So this Shraddha is extremely important. We have to watch our mind and find out to what are the things we have our Shraddha. The moment something happens, if we get disturbed, then we should immediately introspect that how am I getting disturbed? If I consider God to be the Supreme and God to be the All-Knower, All-Pervading, then whatever happens in life has been determined by God, has been given by God. When being such a devotee of God, why am I getting disturbed just because I had a little less of food today or not the proper food today, or somebody gave me some abuses, or somebody did not respect me, or somebody did not call me for an invitation or for a function. Why are these things bothering me? That means in my mind is full of all these Shraddhas. It is not the Shraddha for the truth, Shraddha for the attainment of self-realization or anything. All these virtues, they lead to Samadhana. That's a stable state of the mind, when the mind is always resting on truth, given to truth and practice of truth. The last is, the six are over, the fourth of the Sadhana Chatushtaya is Mumuksha, the aspiration for liberation. It is not that I will not be born again. Mumuksha means whatever bondage we are feeling now, liberation from that. We do feel bondage. If we don't feel bondage, then we will not be sadhak at all. Any seeker, any sadhak, first of all, he wants to grow to something else. That means he feels a bondage that I want to become pure, but the mind is not allowing me to become pure. Every time I decide that I will have only pure thoughts, I will no more get agitated when I am not getting something or I am not given the position. But again and again I find that my mind betrays me and I am not able to. Every day I decide that I will remain peaceful, but I am not able to become peaceful. The mind gets agitated the moment something happens in the office or in the family. It is getting agitated. All these are the bondages. I want to become impersonal, but I am not able to become impersonal. I always become constricted, always looking for my selfish aims. Every time Swamiji is asking me to become selfless, I am become so selfish that I don't give food to people also properly. It happens. All these are bondages we are suffering from. That is, we are not able to become what we want. Something is hindering us, something is binding us. Liberation from all these things, if it is intelligence, we are not able to know the truth properly. That is also a bondage, that we are not able to freely think of that satisfied. We are not fulfilled that I have known and I don't want to know anything, I don't have any doubt. As long as there is doubt, there is bondage also. So, mumuksha means an aspiration for growth to this universal dimension where we will not be limited by the usual constrictions of our worldly life, the daily life. We will be free of all kinds of constrictions we are suffering from, all selfishness we are suffering from. This aspiration to become universal, selfless, liberated, that is called the mumuksha. These four together constitute the real sadhana of spirituality. And they take us to finally to the wisdom which fulfills us both way, both emotionally and intelligentially. I think time is up. It's up to 4 o'clock it was, no?
4:15.
Oh, 4:15. I thought it is, I have already crossed the time. Any question is there, right? Today I don't know why, because of the timing or so, somehow I was feeling very not very enthusiastic. I was feeling that it is becoming very dull. But let us see. Otherwise Ma will teach you something which will give you Bhakti Rasa also. We thought that I will take about 3 classes and Ma will take 2. Altogether we have 5. So that you have a cocktail of everything, Swamiji's and Ma's and all kinds. If any question is there, I can deal with it now for 5 minutes.
Shama and Dhamma, difference.
Shama and Dhamma.
Shama and Dhamma. Shama is dealing with the inner personality, that is mind basically, mind and intelligence. And Dhamma is dealing with the indriyas, the sense organs. Dhamma is partly external, partly pranic. The physical is not just external. Sense organs have their external role, but our life forces are also part of it. So Dhamma involves pranayama also. We practice pranayama to have control over our senses. Practice different physical disciplines to have control over our senses. It is extremely important. Unless the senses are controlled, the physical control is there, it's extremely difficult to control the mind. But suppose by mental, this viveka buddhi, that discrimination, practice of analysis and discrimination, if the mind becomes peaceful, then automatically Dhamma, that external pranayama and exercise and discipline may not be necessary. Because when the mind becomes peaceful, unless the mind helps the indriyas to go astray, the indriyas will remain controlled. If the mind is under control, the indriyas will automatically be controlled. But right from childhood, we practice some sense controls, so that they are already set and the mind control can be easily had. That is why I am saying here they are not separate. They are actually one helping the other. We call the process as regenerative process. That is, A will help B to grow and B will help A to grow. The more we practice Dhamma, it will bring peace to the mind. The more the mind becomes peaceful, automatically we have control over the senses also. Shama and Dhamma help each other. These two together will make us have titiksha also. When the senses are under control, we don't overeat unnecessarily, being greedy of the taste. Morning I took 2.5 bada and suffered till the lunch. When the rice went in, only I started feeling a little comfortable. It is only the taste of the vada we don't get here. It is only because of we are getting the vada. In ashram we don't get vada. But because of your coming here, we are blessed with vada. So, I took 2.5, I should have taken only one. So, when during the lunch, Ma said that we have more leftovers, would you like to take? I said, they are already dancing in my stomach, I don't want more. So, actually the sense discipline is extremely important. It can be practiced from childhood so that the mind remains pacified. And the two together will bring in some titiksha, that is, not getting perturbed by the external situation. Even if you don't have food, it is more of a mind problem. If you set right that no, I will not have food, what is there? You will find that the hunger also goes. Nothing happens. How can people take to the bhiksha with, say, the kings used to renounce and take to begging? How could they do it? If you become a beggar out of some misfortune, suppose you lose your business, the business is gone, nobody accepts you, the family people also rejected you and you have to walk on the street, how much misery you will have? Try to imagine. Will you not become very agitated and depressed and what not? And the same life a king is taking willfully. They are opting for it. Then it becomes enriching. The same beggarhood he is doing. He has left his kingdom, he has left all his gold, he has left his position. Nobody on the street will recognize him anymore. He is walking off without having food. Maybe after 7 days he will get something in a house. How can he take to it gladly, joyfully? When it is willfully taken, it becomes enriching. It is all to play, it's a jugglery of the mind. So if we can control our mind, everything becomes controlled. And mind can be controlled by the wisdom, by the knowledge, by intelligence.
See, in Shankaracharya, Shankaracharya's one composition is Upadesha Panchakam. 5 Upadeshas are given to the seekers. It's very nice. So in one, I don't remember the full shloka, chakshudhyadhischa chikitsyatam bhikshaushadham yachyatam. This hunger is considered to be, it's a vyadhi, and you have to treat it. And whatever food you get, that has to be considered as medicine. So we should not be greedy to take when we get good food. Generally, when we get good food as the vada today, people will take more. But it says that it is to be considered as medicine. Like suppose we get homeopathy pills, which are very sweet, and it has to be taken maybe once a week or maybe twice a week. We don't eat it up, or cough syrups which are very tasty. We don't eat the whole bottle up in one day. We have to take it in doses. So even for food, we have to be very controlled. This restraint and control that always we have to have in our life for all the senses.
Shamadamadi
Shadga Sampattihi. Shamadama Adi means Shamadama etc. Shadga Sampattihi. Actually, sometimes it is referred to as Shadga Sampattihi also. That six virtues. Sampatti means our attainment virtues. In sadhana, all the attainments are mental attainments, virtue. They don't consider any physical attainment as attainment. So the sampatti of a sadhaka is his mental attainment. So these are the virtues, six virtues, the set of six virtues, which is the sampatti, the treasure for a sadhaka. This Viveka Chudamani, Swamiji's lectures are there on this also, no?
Swamiji doesn't have, but Viveka Chudamani, Shankaracharya's, these things are given.
But Swamiji has a lot of, quite a few CDs on Viveka Chudamani.
Viveka Chudamani, Swamiji has extensively discussed all these. CDs
in
are
CIRD. There.
Actually, for any seeker, this sadhana chatushtaya is the most important thing that one should pursue. I mean, we should never forget it, not even for a moment. Whatever we do, right from morning when we get up till we go to sleep, the activities that we do, everything should be around sadhana chatushtaya, so that this sadhana, the chatushtaya sadhana that we are speaking about, we are reading about, we are learning, it should be strengthened. Whatever we do, they should be strengthened, and whatever we do, it should be conducive for this sadhana. Then only our sadhana can go on. It is not enough that we simply sit and listen to sadhana chatushtaya. It has to be practiced, lived, and brought into life.
There is anything in this sadhana? Contentment and santushta of the mind. It is our faculty, the mind.
Shama means, shama includes contentment of the mind. Shama means specified condition of the mind. It's contentment. Shama actually means contentment. Shall we? Huh? Any? This is practice of Viveka and Vairagya. As I said, the initial, these two, practice of Viveka, and when you take Viveka seriously, naturally Vairagya will come. So practice of Viveka and Vairagya will make you unaffected. That unaffectedness and automatic, suppose you are given to some sense enjoyment. So that the either when you are getting it, you are getting disturbed. Running after it also, and when you are denied it also, you are getting agitated, you may get angry. So actually your mind is completely controlled by the object because of the link by the attraction, sense attraction. So when you can free yourself from this servility, that this slavishness of our sense organs, automatically you will remain unaffected. that if it is given to you or not given to you, it won't bother you so much. Like that, everything, about everything, when the mind is looking for prestige or a position or a promotion, if you think about it, that you are becoming slave to the external position. So I will not become a slave to it, I will do my work to the best of my capability, and automatically whatever the company also needs good people, so they will promote you, or I may go to somewhere else also. But this always looking for something, that is clinging to the promotion, clinging to the position, that is making you affected. So if you keep yourself away from that clinging, then automatically, suppose you are demoted or you are promoted or you are transferred or you are sacked, it doesn't bother you so much, you will not get affected so much.
Remembering one shloka from Yoga Vasishtha, Swamiji refers to it very often. Samyag alokanat satyad vasana praviliyate vasana vilaye chetaha shamyat yasneha deepavat. That is, the question that you are asking, this affectations come because we remain agitated, that we are not getting what we want, unfulfillment of desires. All agitations are because of unfulfillment of desires. So this shloka says, samyag alokanat satyat. When we think or contemplate on the truth, what is the truth? That it is that one truth is imperishable, which is always there, which is eternal, which has no change. When we think about that, then what happens? Vasana praviliyate, the desires fall off slowly, get sublimated. And when we look into the truth and we understand that we are only moving behind what is perishable, which will not remain with us. When we contemplate on that fact, then what happens? Shamyatyasneha deepavat. The mind becomes so calm and tranquil, just as when a lamp is burning and its oil is over, it will become cool and calm. Similarly, when the vasanas and the desires go away, the mind becomes calm like that. That is shama.
Dealings, if you want to move further, you do want to achieve.
Swamiji has dealt with it quite elaborately.
This is a very common question.
Tomorrow can we take it? Because they rang the bell.
Okay.
They will be
tomorrow.
Pravuddham vimuktam vikaradihinam prasannam sadanityabodhasvanupam param nishchalam nirgunam sarvarupam bhajeham sadam smarami pranami prabuddham vimuktam vikaradihinam prasannam sadanitya bodhasvarupam param nishchalam nirgunam sarvarupam bhajeham sadanusmarami pranamami.